All right, recording. Hello, and some things have changed. You may have known. Have you? What do you think of the new digs?
You've got new digs?
We've got new digs. The freebooters have new digs. Look,
The website. Yeah, no, the website's great.
yeah. I'm well chuffed with that. Do you hear that? That's you might think that's hard English oak, but it is not. It is Debian 13 running on a DigitalOcean droplet. Hardy, that is hardy.
The hardiest of VPS providers.
Yeah, it, actually, to do the basics, I always in my head work up self-hosting to be this challenge that nowadays it is not.
No,
I
it really
actually I got the
isn't.
website set up, the actual website and everything, just the Nginx. I basically is blank Debian, Nginx, certbot, which just it was one line of thing, and then that sorted me out. Thank God I hate certificates, so thank God for certbot. And then I just
Wing always recommends. I always forget what it's called, but Wing always recommends a different web server. And I can't
Apache.
remember. No, God, no, not Apache. Apache's worse than Nginx. Used to have to deal with Apache. It was horrible. No, can't remember what it's called,
Okay,
but
I think I know what you
Wing
mean.
is
Is it another
horrible
like
to
a
play.
small? Is it a small like open source kind of project?
Yeah, and it's it deal it ha the, well one of the nice it's a lot easier to configure. It kind of does what you'd expect by default rather than having to tell it to do the obvious thing, which is kind of the case with Nginx. And it takes care of certificates automatically itself,
That's
which is
amazing.
kind of nice. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Did you manage to log into the server, by the way?
I haven't tried yet, honestly.
Okay,
Yeah.
cool. Yeah, I think you've
Didn't.
got sudo privileges, so if there's anything, because at the moment, I'm actually quite surprised how cheap it was. I looked around at a couple of places, including Namecheap that do a VPS service,
Okay.
and the Namecheap was more expensive, I think. Not by much,
They
but
must just be reselling something, right? They can't be doing their
yeah, it's
own.
probably a white label kind of thing. Yeah, I'd
Yeah.
imagine. But it was about it was, and I know DigitalOcean, and I know that they're fast. I know that they're reliable. I know how the dashboard thing works. And I know what I can
Yeah, I
expect.
find, yeah, I think a lot of people like DigitalOcean's not very hardcore and they go with something a bit more hardcore, but I think DigitalOcean, like, yeah, the control panel and whatever, you know, all of that stuff is straightforward. And coming from, like, I'm on the Oracle free tier because it's free, and it's horrible. Like, trying to do anything is horrible.
I'd
And I
rather
do
pay the
miss.
DigitalOcean fee at this point,
Yeah, I know, but
which
that's a
is,
good thing, yeah.
it's, I think it's $4 a month for the cheapest tier, because we're only hosting like a podcast website, you know,
Yeah.
we easily are on the lower tier. And yeah, so $4 a month, what's that, like 3 quid, 350?
Yeah. And that will be decreasing, I think. Because of
Decreasing.
the well, I mean, the dollar's
Oh, the dollar's on
sort
the
of
way up.
shrinking, isn't
Down.
it?
But it,
Down,
yeah.
yeah. So we get more dollars to the pound.
Very nice, very nice. Yeah. So I'm pretty chuffed with it. I somewhat apologize for butchering the hell out of plock.
No, that's fine. No, you tidied it up and improved it. That's totally fine.
Well, you were asleep at the time. I was gonna badger you,
Yeah.
and then I thought I'd give it a go myself. And then, have you seen that episode of Father Ted, where he's like, where it's the one with the raffle, and he's they're giving away a car, and then Father Ted's like, oh, there's a little dent in it. Let me just tap this out with a hammer. And then, like, it's like 5 hours later, and it's a mess. That's
Well,
kind
no,
of what I've.
you didn't make a mess of it. You tidied it up. You quite got with it.
I am actually quite happy with what it is now. I don't know how you want to, because of course it's under GPL. You license it under GPL too. So I am legally obligated to provide you with the changes as well as the dates when those changes were made.
The dates?
I think so. I think that's what it says in the GPL too.
No, you don't have to provide me. I don't think even in that, yeah, I don't think it's that you have to provide me with them. You just have to make them public, I think, is the
Okay,
yeah.
because I put the code up on I renamed the thing Plock 2, put it up on Codeberg. So If you, I can, I don't know if you, because I can't stand GitLab now that I know Codeberg.
Yeah, no, as far as I'm concerned, that's cleaner code now, so make that the main version.
Okay. I mean, I don't know if I want, if, shall I bring you in on the Codeberg, or do you want to put it back into GitLab, or?
I'm not, like, I mean, it was you who wanted this script,
mm-hmm.
and it's you who's using it, so you might as well, you know.
Run with it, okay.
Deal with it.
it's my problem now.
Yours now.
I mean, it's pretty feature complete, isn't it? Like, it's,
I think so, yeah. I mean, yeah. There's things you could, I mean, you were toying with putting the player at the top or the bottom of the description.
I ended up going, like, with the top because...
Yeah, stuff like that, that you could, like, make that an option or whatever, but I'd rather not go down that route with this. Like, if you, like, if you want to change that, just change the script. It's easy enough.
Yeah, the script is very readable. You know, I commented as I went, so...
That I did. I don't like that. I don't like proper commenting. Yeah,
you like it like, you're what, mate?
Sloppy and half-arsed. Yeah, this, you know, this does the stuff. I don't like comments that are too helpful.
Too helpful. Too professional. It's too corporate. We've sold out.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah.
All right, I'll cash up the comments a bit.
I'll just every week do a patch that just removes all the comments.
This is the bit that does the bit, and this is the bit. Yeah, I see. The thing I really like, because, like, I'm still at the stage where I'm micro coding, right? I work like a line at a time. And what really helped me was you provide the sort of the structure of it, how it's supposed to work.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, I'll change a little bit here, and I'll change a little bit there, and then I'll change a little bit here. And then, you know, it might be a bit of ship of Theseus, but that's why
some of it is better ways of doing things, and some of it is just a different style. And yeah, I was talking Wing actually recently. Like, I think Wing agreed with this. I lean towards writing code that I can read. Like, even if I know there's like a terser way of doing it, I lean towards something that I can read, because I know that if I come back and edit it, I will be grateful that I did that.
Yeah, I was told that, because there was one thing you did differently that I did change, which was a stylistic thing. I think it was like, do you use something like backtick squiggly line for home, and then I change that to home and then dollar or something like that?
Possibly, yeah.
It's something
I vary with that. When it's something that I know understands the squiggle, I'll use the squiggle. Like Bash, I know understands the squiggle. When I'm not sure, I'll be careful and use the home.
Yeah, I used to use the squiggle, and then I came up against something like, I was doing something with FFmpeg or a script like that, and then it needed home, and then I just kind of stuck with home because that's the safe option there.
Yeah, you do have to be careful with home, because was it Valve who got themselves into trouble with one of their Bash scripts that was part of Steam, where I think they used, I can't remember what they used, but they it was essentially like home and then a variable for a path, but if the path was blank, it would just end up right, like, deleting your root folder or something like that.
Yeah.
So you got to make sure that there's no possibility that this all just evaluates to a slash, basically.
Right, yeah. Okay, yeah.
But I don't think that's the case with our stuff. It wasn't the home, it's something else. But yeah.
There's
some environment variable that they were expecting to be there, but if it isn't, you just end up with a slash.
Yeah, I typically do my best to avoid any of my scripts deleting anything. If something is likely to be deleted, I'll move it to a temp folder rather than just delete it. I could move it to trash. I'm not super familiar with how trash works. It is just a dot directory in somewhere in your home directory for local trash.
Well, Linux doesn't have a trash thing. That's a DE thing usually, or some file managers will do it maybe. But yeah, there's no built-in concept of trash on Linux.
I have a script that cleans up stuff, like caches and stuff, that does empty the trash, which I can have a look at now. And that tends to do it across the board for all, like, Linuxy stuff. I still haven't done my video about my Bash aliases, but more and more of them are turning into scripts. So it removes /share/trash. That is where that's the thing that it clears out.
Yeah, so, I think that's just a thing. Like, I don't think that's a convention rather than a I assume that's a convention that various desktops use or something like that.
Yeah, but, I didn't look it up. Yeah. I just worked it out from something or other.
It's obviously on the shell. If you remove something, it's just removed unless you make it so that it doesn't do it that way. Mm. I think for a little bit have. I think it was when I first started with Arch. I did have a thing that intercepted RM and would just move it somewhere and, you know, act like a, yeah, the, you know, wastebasket on Windows or whatever. But I just got rid of it. You know, if you accidentally delete something, you just fucking live with it.
The thing is, I don't, yes, but I mean, I'm pretty good with backups, but.
Yeah, I'm not.
The thing is, it's like I could alias RM to like MV trash folder.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know, like sometimes I do kind of worry that I'll just be like, instead of MV, I'll just type RM and then it's gone. Like sometimes I do, yeah, like, yeah. Sometimes I do, like, do you ever do like word long typos when you're like typing too fast?
Yeah, yeah. The one that always scares me is when I'm typing DD commands.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, I just accidentally press enter. You know, I just move my elbow and it hits the enter key where you just got the slash rather than typing them. Yeah, and that always scares me. But yeah.
Other than
that, if I just delete, there's nothing really. Like, I occasionally accidentally delete things and it's a pain in the ass, but it's, I can live with it.
It hasn't happened yet, but one day it will happen. Usually, when I accidentally delete things, it'll be like, oh, I won't need that. And then 10 minutes later, oh, I need that. It's a. I don't know.
I think I told you I was cleaning stuff out a few months ago and accidentally deleted my Steam library, which is, but again, I mean, that's not permanently gone. That's just you got to download it again, but it's, you know, it's annoying. Yeah. But...
Oh, speaking of Steam, do you know the game Vampire Survivors?
Yes, of course I do, yes.
They have online co-op multiplayer now.
I am not. That's one of those games where I played it obsessively for like a week, and then I realized I was playing it out of compulsion rather than out of any actual desire, and I wasn't enjoying it. I was just trying to unlock stuff. Like, it was not fun. Like, there was a period when it was a great deal of fun, but like very quickly that dropped off, and I just and now I kind of like I don't I it it makes me sick to look at it a little bit. Like, I think it's a great game, but I'm like an ex-heroin addict with it or something. Like,
it's four-player co-op as well. It's not just two players.
Yeah, no, I've got no interest in that. That would be really fun, but I've got no.
One more hit.
Yeah. No, it's just, and I think I don't fundamentally like it is a really fun game, to be clear. But I think I just fundamentally don't like that loop of like, and now unlock this, and now unlock this, and now unlock this. Like, it's just a fucking grind to nothing. It's a pastime. It's not a game.
It's a feeling. It's a way of life.
I should have a disco soundtrack.
That'd be
so good on Vampire. Yeah. I know, it's a feeling. Just
But I've been doing a lot with Bash actually. I'm just looking at my scripts now. Also, one of the things I do it for is rsync is actually fucking great for that kind of thing. I was starting to use SSHFS, I think it was.
Yeah.
But I found our rsync, especially with the larger MP3 files, to be a lot better for transferring.
You can just give rsync an SSH like address.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, I love rsync. I love that you can tell it what to download, what to, you know, what to replace, not what not to replace. Like, yeah. Rsync's great.
And
yeah,
it does it in blocks. It's quite good for, you know, it does. I like the, I've got it so that it's set, I've got an alias so that it tells you the progress as well. It's really good for that.
Yeah. No, I like it telling the progress. Do you have in your SSH folder, do you have like a, because you can do a .config and make aliases, you can make SSH aliases.
Oh,
and,
I didn't know you could do that.
And you can give it like, so you don't have to type it, like if you've got an SSH address where it's, you know, it's this user, this, you can't put passwords, but this user, this port with these settings, you can just put that in a config file and then you can use like set an alias for the name. So the server, I think it's the one that is now UWAT, the Tilda Club thing I made. Just like I just do SSH TV, but you can also use those aliases with rsync. You can do rsync TV :// and then the path that you want to copy the stuff to. So it just makes it really, really straightforward, really easy, or not straightforward, really simple.
Yeah, I just did a little script that rsyncs like, so I got a folder of the podcast, and then it just rsyncs between that folder and the the local and the remote. And also what I quite like about it, I don't know if this is a security hazard to say this, so I'll edit it out if necessary, but you don't need to do the IP address. You can just go to login so-and-so at freebooters.uk. Because historically, it's one of those things that it might be glaringly obvious to everyone except for me, but I've always used IP addresses.
I think there was a point where I realised, this is the host name, so yeah, of course I can SSH into that. Yeah.
So I don't usually feel that I need it, unless I'm doing a several step process that's the same every time, like rsyncing. Then I don't know. Like aliases seem a little bit like, I mean, quick, mildly quicker, but
I mean, host name, yeah, it's more handy when you want to tell it what user, what port, you know, that kind of thing.
At the moment it's like a dead simple setup. Because sometimes I follow the LAMP guide on DigitalOcean, because you know, it used to be the case that, like, oh, everyone's talking about how great the documentation on DigitalOcean is, and it's always helped me in the past. But this time I sort of muddled through on my own, because I don't think, if I recall, the documentation on DigitalOcean had the cert bot stuff. So it was just random Googling slash a bit from memory and some like config templates that, you know, you find online and stuff. But it, like, I felt like I needed a lot less than what a standard setup would include. It's like Nginx, certbot, the files, and something
LAMP already is Apache, MySQL, PHP. I don't want any of those things.
No.
The simplest web server, whatever that. I've been using. I use Nginx, but I do intend to look at that one that Wing recommended.
Speaking of Bash, because I've been doing a lot of Bash, so that's like all this super on my mind right now. So I don't know if you've heard, but KeePass XC have changed their contribution policy to allow, I think, like AI-assisted code.
Oh.
And that was the reaction of everyone else, really.
I'm not using it anyway, but if I was, I would wait for the fork.
Their defense was, and to be fair to KeePass XC, they've been very communicative about this on Mastodon. You know, like, they've been explaining themselves and answering questions and stuff, and taking the abuse head on. So fair play to them for that. They claim that we're still going to human review the code.
No, I don't care. That's not good enough. No, fuck off. No.
And a lot of the arguments against that were like, yeah, but like the entire point of things like LLMs is to make things look believable. If they happen to function as if they're believable, that's a bonus. But it's like someone described it as, this is what an answer to that question might look like. You know, it's a bullshit machine, you know, like it's just like...
Yeah, this is something in the form of...
this is something resembling an answer.
That's not even the problem for me. It's just, the AI is just a slippery slope. It's just, I think you've just got to have a hard line no, even... There are small... Not small. There are specific applications to which those things are suited. But anything general purpose is not it. And also the whole point of... I was on this, talking about this with Wing the other day. He was saying, like, the whole point of free software, one of the points of it is it's made by humans. Like, we don't have the commercial pressures, so we don't need to bow to things like, it's not about productivity, it's not about how efficient it is, it's not about how quickly you can write the code. It's code made with love by humans. And yeah, I think that's it. It's destructive to culture is the problem with AI.
This is a great lead-in, a great segue. Our first podcast was called, one of our first podcasts, if not the first podcast, I got it right, was, let's scroll down to the bottom. Oh, bollocks, it was our, it was like our fifth episode. One, two, three, four, a fifth episode, Will AI Kill Art?
But it is the anniversary, is it not, of our first
31st of October. So how many days late are we? Oh, a week and some days.
We're recording on the 31st of October. We probably release it sometime around 11th of November.
Yeah. Maybe the 10th if we're
Merry Halloween to those who observe.
Yeah, no trick or treaters this year.
No, I don't think there's any air either. But there were plumbers.
Oh,
I've got a short plumber story because our toilet was fucked. So plumbers came round, and my sister was supposed to be in when they came, but they were late. So my sister had gone out, so I had to go and let them in. And meanwhile, they were waiting for somebody to come to the door because I assumed my sister would get it. They were texting my sister like, "Where are you? You're supposed to be letting us in." And then I let them in, and then one of them texted my sister and said, "Oh, it's okay. The old chap let us in."
How bad was that for your anxiety?
I was feeling okay in that moment. So that can be. I mean, it's either possible, impossible, or let's find out. In that moment, it was possible, so it was fine.
Because so it's not the old guy let us in, and then he shat himself.
Literally shat himself. Didn't have a toilet to do it in.
Oh no!
But yeah, no. The bit. So there's a toilet. I don't understand plumbing, so this is just stuff I've inferred. But there's a toilet which sits on the floor, and then under the floor, there's like a pipe that goes in a 90-degree angle kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the gasket around that pipe was broken.
Oh.
So they took that pipe out and replaced it with a new one. But the old pipe, they just put in the bathroom bin. It's quite big. It's quite big and quite shitty. They just put it in the bathroom. So my sister took the bathroom bin and put it in a bin liner.
Hey, I mean...
How many... Go on, sorry.
Oh, no, I just was going to give a shout-out to Indoor Plumbing again.
Indoor Plumbing.
The more I think about it, the more I'm just amazed at it. And, how ridiculously mental it is that we privatise that. It's the thing that society runs on.
Oh, no, it's insane. Yeah, no, it's absolutely fucking insane, yeah. And more than... Like, the toilet plumbing is great, but more than that, like, running water.
Mm. I'll shit in the garden at a push, but, like...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or I can't...
chamber pot, throw it out the window, Elizabeth.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't go outside, so not my problem.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's the running water. You know, I literally had a shower before coming on today. Like, I was just basking
absolutely
in it.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Is that... what's that... SMB, that webcomic, SMB something, that's often quite political or philosophical.
It's not like XKDC or whatever it's called.
No. A good one.
they had that one thing that everyone uses and then now parodies.
I'm not saying he's never right and I'm not saying he's never funny, but he is always insufferably fucking irritating and smug in that way that only male nerds can be.
I have no idea who that is.
It's SMB Comics. That's the one. Yeah, I'll just link it. You'll know it when you see it. But they did one where they were somehow like communicating with their ancestors, like via like essentially like a Zoom call or something. And they were just showing their ancestors that we've got like indoor plumbing, plentiful, cheap calories and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, the ancestors were something like the ancestors were like, oh, you must have created marvels in society if you've got all these, you know, like. Luxurious, everybody's living in luxury. Society must be amazing. And they're like, well.
Someone posted up a toot on Mastodon that fuck it, I can't stop thinking about. And I don't know it. I don't know where it went, but it's basically, it's like oil is the most eldritch thing you can imagine, right? So you dig this thick black stuff up from the ground, and it will unleash untold technologies that will progress society centuries into the future, but at the cost
it's this thick black goop that you pull out of the ground that is the bodies of dead animals from eons ago.
It projects our technology into the future at the cost of us slowly degrading back into. I can't stop thinking about that now. Like, that is so sort of, you know, that's like the essence of Lovecraft right there, really, isn't it?
I was reading about oil the other day, coincidentally, because I was just For reasons, I was just looking up because the USA is a net oil exporter,
right? Okay,
which,
yeah,
you know, because they produce a lot of oil, and I was wondering why, but they import almost as much as they export,
yeah,
almost, and I was curious as to why. And apparently there's different kinds of oil. There's okay. light and heavy oil, which is basically just thicker or less thick. And there's sweet and sour oil.
Okay.
And that refers to how much sulfur is in it. And so America, according to my research, America produces a lot of light sweet oil, which is the most desirable oil because it's the easiest to process. So I think they export that and import the stuff that's hard to process and process it and add value and make money through that, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah, that is kind of interesting. But they process it to get to that light sweet oil.
Well, to petrol or plastics or, you know, all your fertilizers, all of the things we use.
Okay, so they basically sell the good stuff and then import in the shit.
Import in the shit and then, because they've got, you know, the sophisticated, refinement, you know, that certain countries that produce oil might not have. But it's also, I think it's also worth noting that the top two oil producing countries in the world are the USA and Canada.
Yeah, that sounds about right, actually. Yeah, I mean, I know we think about Saudi Arabia.
You always think about the Middle East when you think about oil production, but it's, and the countries that, I think 60% of America's oil imports come from Canada, and another 20% or so come from Mexico. So it's mostly from the Americas. They're importing very little from the Middle East.
Mm. Yeah, I think I did read that somewhere, yeah. So where does the Middle East oil... Does that go mostly to America as well, or does that go to Europe?
And some goes to America, but yeah, the rest of the world basically, yeah, Asia, Europe in particular, because we don't produce. I think it's only us and Denmark, isn't it? Maybe that produces oil. I think both in the North Sea fields. I don't think there's much, excluding Russia. Russia is another enormous oil producer.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, I imagine that's caused some tensions in the past. Do you ever wonder about how rich Putin like really is?
I mean, I assume he is disgustingly wealthy.
I reckon he's the richest man in the world, but obviously so much of it's off the books, we'll never know. That's my sort of punt.
I don't know, because I think if he was on the take too much, the oligarchs wouldn't put up with it.
I think he'd kill the oligarchs. He's killed oligarchs before, right?
Oh, he has killed oligarchs, but, like, you know, the oligarchs collectively, I think, are the only sort of power that can really do anything about him.
But he's probably in league with them anyway, right? Like, I reckon...
Yeah, but that's kind of what I mean. I think he's in league with him, with them, but they wouldn't want him... I don't think they would want him to be, at least publicly, excessively wealthy.
Oh, no. But, like, the thing about Putin is it is quite... mysterious, right? Like, he doesn't speak English very often in public. He doesn't have grand displays of wealth, but then a lot of wealthy people don't, right? Like,
to be honest,
if I think of the most ostentatious displays of wealth, I kind of think of Donald Trump, and he is far from that. Although he's made a lot of money lately, but you know, he's nowhere near.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, when you think of like. I mean, Musk is now a trillionaire because of that thing they did at Tesla. And he's twattish about it.
Yeah.
But you think, like, you know, the sort of previous generation of billionaires, you know, Bill Gates, you know, in his fucking, like, jumpers. he's not what you think of, you know, in years gone by when you think of, you know, the what was the word for, like, billionaires back in the day that was kind of classy?
It's like
the Rockefellers, and you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, not entrepreneurs.
I keep thinking entrepreneurs.
No, I know what you mean. Like, trailblazer, industrialist.
An older word.
Industrial.
No, I think more. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe there isn't one.
Grandfather. No, there is. There is definitely. It's like grandfather of industries, pioneers, or.
But no, when you think of the mega rich in days gone by, like the Rockefellers, like they were living it up, right? They were living the high life, living in luxury, like publicly luxurious. Now that's celebrities that do that, not the actual. Well, the celebrities live and present their lives like they're the ultra rich. And, these kind of celebrities are very rich, but they're not the ultra rich. And then the ultra rich are, your Gateses and your Jumpers and whatever.
Yeah. I think part of it is that to that tier, we might even think of it as an aristocratic tier, as it were. I think to them, wealth is less about, like, they've already got the lifestyle they could possibly want, right? Like, that's years ago, right? They've super surpassed that now. To them now, I think at this point, it's a God complex. They want to change the world. They want the power. And to them, the ostentatious displays probably hinder that more than help it at all.
Works against it.
Jeff Bezos, as far as I can tell, as far as I'm aware, still owns the most expensive house in LA. Which I can't even imagine how much that would cost. The most expensive house in the most expensive part of the States. yeah, of course it would be someone like Jeff Bezos for sure. But they're all sending rockets to the moon, or Bill Gates being the biggest landowner in the States. He wants to change the concept of agriculture. Now tell me that's not a man with a God complex.
It's James Bond villain.
That's James Bond villain. That's totally yeah. And Bill Gates, of course,
buying newspapers is
newspapers. Yeah. And the vaccine thing with Bill Gates as well, wanting to save the world and all that kind of stuff. Elon Musk terraforming Mars. Yeah, what's Zuckerberg? What's his God complex? Hot wife.
Well, have you heard the stories about Musk trying to get women?
Oh God, they're horrible! Oh my God!
There was one where I think one of his private air hostesses in one of his private planes, and he offered her a horse to sleep with him, which is just what you do when you're offered a horse to sleep with somebody. What am I going to do with a horse?
What am I going to do with a horse?
I'm not that hungry today.
No, don't fancy lasagna. I do remember one time it was quite well documented where he got his personal assistant or something to chat someone up, and he got knocked back quite bad from that.
I love that women still turn him down. That gives you faith in humanity, right?
Do you know what? I actually have a lot of faith in humanity these days. I know things look pretty grim, but I actually genuinely, I don't know if it could be stupidity or naivety or something like that. But I know that, on the Feddy in particular, because that's the only social network I'm on, people can often be a bit doom and gloom and overcritical and, well, actually, and everything's always awful and, political purity tests and stuff like that. But honestly, the vibe I'm getting from, the world out there, I think it's good, right?
I lean very optimistic, and I've got I don't know if I'd say I've got faith in people, but I kind of love everybody. I think everybody's interesting and everybody's good. I believe that everybody is in their heart good, and some people get corrupted. But having faith in people implies thinking that things might get better, which I'm not sure about.
See, out of me, you and Hamish, you're definitely the most optimistic. I'm definitely in the middle, and Hamish is just a fucking grumpus a lot of time.
I think you're not far behind me with the optimism.
I'm probably not far behind you. But I think that when it comes to people, I think we are innately, if you want to look at our native moral compass, look at like an animal, right? Animals, they're not inherently good, they're not inherently bad, they're just inherently doing their own thing. And I think that people fundamentally do stick at some kind of vaguely neutral point for the most part. And that's fine. I think that applies to everyone. I think some people might have more of an urge to be altruistic, and I think some people might have more of an urge to be selfish. And I think maybe altruism and selfishness are the better axis rather than good or bad, right? Good or bad is just vague amorphous concepts that don't really mean anything. Because, say what you want about people like Harold Shipman, but he did save the taxpayer a lot of money. Just saying.
No. That's your disgusting moral relativism. That it maps perfectly to good or bad. Things can, if you are brought up as a billionaire, in a billionaire family as a billionaire, then, you're I mean, this is where Marx gets it right. It's mm-hmm. not about morality.
No,
it's about class interests and, you know, and your own material. Anyway, putting that aside, I think we're good. I remember reading years ago about an experiment they did on some kind of monkeys to see whether monkeys have got compassion. And it was something like there was two monkeys in cages and they could see each other. And at the start, they would give both of the monkeys the same task. And if they did the task, they would reward them with a grape.
Mm-hmm.
And then after a while, they started giving them both a task. And when they did the task correctly, they would only reward one of them.
Okay, yeah.
And the other monkey could see this. And then, again, after some more time, the monkey that got rewarded would start passing its grape to the one that didn't. Which, yeah, just demonstrates that, you know, they've got empathy. They can imagine what it's like to be that, you know, like that kind of thing. And I think that's where we are. When it's... And this comes into, I think we may have talked about this before, but like emergency, there's not a ton of data on this because it's a hard thing to study, but people in emergency situations seem to behave altruistically to the point of like, you're thirsty, I'm thirsty, this is our last bottle of water, but I'll give it to you. I'd rather help you than help myself. Which
yeah.
is very contrary to the way that stuff is portrayed in the media for the most part, which is, when I say media, I mean movies and TV.
Yeah, definitely.
I'd love to see more post-apocalyptic stuff where people just,
yeah,
you know, get along and help each other.
Definitely, like that's I mean, and you're going to totally disagree with what I'm about to say. I think Fallout has a lot of that message. There, you know, when you look at the broader message of Fallout, you look at how people do, on the whole, with exceptions, but on the whole, come together to rebuild. Like, you look at all the people in the vaults, and they come out looking down on everyone who actually made it through until now, largely by just sticking together.
And generally, banditry, you know, there are bandits in the world, but banditry is frowned on, yeah.
Yeah, so... I do fundamentally agree. Like, I mean, under those circumstances that you've outlined there, yeah, I think I agree. Like when I live in an area that gets flooded quite a lot, and when things get a bit shitty in that regard, people do typically come together and help and go above and beyond. I think even during COVID, for the most part, I think people on the whole would generally more helpful than selfish. Yeah, definitely. Mm.
And what breaks that down is what Thatcher did, tried to do and succeeded at, which is destroying community and society. I can't remember. It's what's the face off Chapo, but she keeps saying like, well, she didn't keep saying, but you see a lot of posts on Facebook, you know, it's sort of soft leftists, like liberal leftists talk a lot about community building, blah, blah, blah. And her response to that is fuck community. We need society. Which I think that's the correct read, but society gives rise to communities. Having a society, but anyway, my point was when we live in places where we all go off to university, or you know, the majority of people go off to university and then leave their hometown to go and work in, you know, London or Birmingham, whatever, the local large metropolis, and that breaks down communities. You know, people don't know each other. You're just living next to your neighbours. You all commute. You don't really talk to each other. Maybe a little bit now and then, but you know, you don't know each other.
Mm.
And that breakdown, that alienation, prevents people from, you know, behaving in that sort of cooperative, communal way. Yeah, I don't know where really I was going with that. But
no,
when you live in places that have that community, people really do help each other out. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a book I've been meaning to read which talks about how basically the invention of the car contributed to that, or the widespread adoption of the car, which interestingly, funnily enough, actually, shameful to say, but because prior of the free software world, Luke Smith did actually a really interesting video about how roads have kind of contributed to the breakdowns of society.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely, yeah. I mean, they've also been giving people, you know, to an extent, more mobility, more social and economic mobility. You know, going to university and moving to the metropolis is unfortunately the only route to economic mobility. But we can certainly imagine a better way.
Is it? I mean, is that a bit outdated now? Because like, if you look at the people who are the steadiest, safest, and relatively successful earners amongst the working class, plumbers. Or
plumbers, electricians, locksmiths,
yeah. And I think we are seeing a resurgence in the acknowledgement of the importance of trade.
Absolutely, yeah. But the thing is, much fewer of those are needed than people to just work in offices, which I mean, the belief. I mean, the thing. The belief was in the 70s, you know, maybe 50s in America, but more like 60s, 70s here. Was, you know, if you're a working class family and your choice was working down the pit, working in a, you know, a proper factory, or getting a job in an office. Getting a job in an office was a step up.
Right? Absolutely, yeah.
And it was, you know, in those days, in many ways, it was in terms of your well-being and remuneration, but not really so much anymore.
No. No, I think office work now is very much further down the hierarchy. Mm. To be honest, we make movies mocking it and talking about how tedious and laborious and pointless a lot of it. Yeah.
Yep.
Another book I keep meaning to read because I'm terrible for fucking expanding my reading list without knocking out the books. I'll just read some random ass shit about skincare or something or bookbinding. is David Graeber's Bullshit Jobs.
Very good. Yeah.
Because I'm kind of convinced that... I've seen David Graeber, when he was alive, of course, on a lot of podcasts talking about that book when his book came out. Mm. And he... It does feel like we fetishized work to the point of madness. Like, there... How if we cut all of the crap in society, right? What percentage of us would be needed to work, right? Like, they're obviously like, we could do with more doctors, we could do with more firemen, ambulance, doctors. Mm. There are certain professions we could absolutely use more of to an abundance, right? Like, I'm never going to complain about a society that has too many doctors. Like, that's...
No.
You know, or too many plumbers. Or
I think when studies look at this, like, I think it comes out, you know, the average amount that people work per their work day, it comes around somewhere around like 5%, I think lower, but like somewhere around about 5%. So presumably only 5% of people actually need to work. And that's assuming that even that work that is done is entirely necessary, which it probably isn't. Like, I would imagine half of it isn't. So you could probably employ 2% of the population full time, or employ 100% of the population 2% of the time, which would probably be ideal.
Well, what about a three-day work week?
I don't think specialization. I think the reason we don't have that is because it would destroy capitalism.
Yeah.
As soon as you acknowledge that, capitalism is out the fucking window.
Yeah. We could have two or three-day... I'd love a two-day work week.
That, it wouldn't even have to be... It would be like one day, wouldn't it? I mean, and again, this doesn't apply the same across... You know, it's different for doctors than it is for people working in offices. You know, it's different for... You know, like anybody who actually does something useful, it's very different. You tend to be working more of your time. But
imagine if we had enough doctors that your average doctor could just work 2 days a week. Like, would diagnosis be better? Would care be better? Would because their mind would be...
This is another thing that came up the other day. So I mean, I'm old chap now, but I'm not in my 80s or anything. Hmm. And I remember when I was a kid, if you had a cold, and this wasn't just children, if you had a cold and you felt too shitty, you know, you just didn't want to leave the house, the doctor would come to you.
Yeah.
The doctor would come to your house. Like, which is, like, I kind of forgot that was a thing, because that would not, in an absolute emergency, yes, but anything but an emergency, the doctor would not come to your fucking house now.
Mm. That sounds to me a lot safer as well. When, like, if you've got anything contagious, it's better to send the doctor around to your house than you go around to the place with all the sick people.
Yeah. I mean, I remember as a kid just having like a stomach bug. I just had, you know, a bad stomach ache, and I was, you know, lying on the couch, mum bringing me like lemonade or whatever, and the doctor would come round and check on me, and yeah, he's all right, he's just got a stomach bug, here's some whatever, keep an eye on it. Yeah, unimaginable now.
Yeah. And is that just because of efficiency and cost savings?
Cut budgets, employed more.
But is this short-termism cost-cutting? Because, like, we as a country have been moving more and more towards, like, mega hospitals, the concept of having fewer hospitals but, like, bigger specialist units. Mm. Is this going to, like, catch up with us? Like,
It comes from a branch of economics that imagines everything is like a factory. Like, economies of scale apply to things like healthcare, which they do in terms of costs, but they don't in terms of the quality of the service that you're providing. And also, yeah, like you say, short-termism, we're going to get sicker as a people, and that is bad for capitalism. Like, it's to their own detriment.
Yeah, well, capitalism is fundamentally a self-defeating ideology, right? Like, Yeah, it's
Exactly. When we're talking about employment and stuff, like I enjoy political dramas, right? Or yeah, it's sort of political dramas, political thriller type things. And there's been three. I can't remember which. I can only remember two of them. But there's been three of the ones that I've watched in the last couple of years. One was the one with Kevin Spacey.
Oh, House of Cards.
Basically, yeah. House of Cards and Designated Survivor, which I've been watching recently, which is fucking embarrassing. It's so bad. absolutely abysmal. But both of them, in that show, the president puts forward the idea of basically guaranteed employment. So if you can't get a job, the government will employ you to fix infrastructure or something like that. You know, like fix bridges, fix roads, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That's so obviously a good idea that it's in these dumb fucking TV shows.
Yeah.
Like, why do we not? I mean, I know why we don't do that, because it goes against neoliberal economics that believes we need a reserve and force of an unemployment or something to stop wages going too high. But putting that aside, it's such an obviously good idea.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, there's always
just employ people to fix up our infrastructure.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I believe in Japan, although I'm not saying this is a good idea, what I'm about to say, because this is a bit taking it too far. But as I understand it, in Japan, because they have such a work culture, people of retirement pension age usually get given like a really soft job to sort of justify their pension. it's not like a real job. Like, it's something that they can do, but like the idea of
like
just...
like litter picking in the community or something
Yeah, something like that. And because it is just so frowned upon to like just get given money. We need to break that down. Like, we need to we need to see this.
Well,
is okay.
We need to apply it. We can maybe keep it, but apply it to the billionaires rather than the people who just need to eat.
Well, I'm kind of thinking the billionaires are kind of, you know, a bit headless at this point. Like, they kind of just need to go like in the most severest terms possible. Like, I don't even know, like, there might have been a time when I'd let them live, but I think now...
I don't care whether they live. I'm generally, we should avoid killing people if we don't have to. I don't care if they... We just need to get rid of the system that... We need to expropriate all their wealth and just make them not billionaires, and then it doesn't matter.
I don't know if they'd survive not being billionaires at this point. I think that...
Well, I'm fine with that.
Yeah. Maybe put them in an underground vault amongst themselves and let them build their own little underground mole people society.
Well, I watched another TV show lately. It was basically that. It was a Spanish language Spanish TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And the premise is, this is spoiler for the first episode. The premise is that a bunch of billionaires gave money to this project to build a bunker in case everything goes to shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then if everything goes to shit, they'll all go and live with this very luxurious bunker. So things kind of go to shit geopolitically. Like, things are, you know, looking a bit ropey. And then they get this message from the bunker saying, yeah, things are going to get bad. Come to the bunker. So all the billionaires, I'm going to rush through this. Mm-hmm. All the billionaires go to the bunker. And then there's news broadcasts inside the bunker, and, you know, things are getting worse. Nuclear war breaks out, and, you know, there's bombs going off above the bunker, and like, they've got a camera showing above the bunker, and it's, you know, it's all desolate, devastated. Blah, blah, blah. You know, there's rumbling, there's rocks crushing through. It's all very disastrous. And then the sort of twist at the end of the first episode is that it's all a scam. basically, it's like, things were tense outside, but they've all just been sort of gaslit in their lives. And then when they get inside the bunker, all the news reports are fake about all this nuclear war and stuff. So the idea is just build this bunker for the billionaires, convince them that there's an ongoing nuclear war, and, you know, the top side is uninhabitable, and just keep milking money out, which is kind of genius. I love that. Unfortunately, it's not a very good show, but it's a great idea for a show.
Yeah, it's called
Billionaires Bunker in English.
But the trouble is, the billionaires are likely to be the ones setting off the bombs. Or at least very close to it, right? So,
you know, the primacy of politics, it's still, you know, politicians. You know, if nuclear war breaks out, it's going to be because, you know, America does something stupid to Russia and Russia responds and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Or China.
I don't see China's not going to set off a nuke.
No, I mean, America does something stupid to China and then China responds, you know, it just escalates.
Yeah, I think China would de-escalate.
I think China would de-escalate as well. But there was a thing with Ukraine where this is towards the end of Biden being president, and he authorized the use of, I think it was cruise missiles inside Russian territory. And so the Ukrainians used these American-made cruise missiles inside Russian territory, blow something up. And the consensus, I think, is that the thinking was that, yes, that's an act of war, and a more unstable Russia could have taken that as an act of war and responded, but they'll just go like, oh, Biden's senile, you know, we'll just give this one a pass. But Russia could quite easily have just responded to that, say that's an act of war. They could have, you know, bombed our military base on Cyprus, and then it all fucking escalates from there.
Yeah.
That was really fucking dumb of the Americans. And it achieves nothing in terms of the war with Russia. It achieves absolutely nothing.
Mm. Yeah. Absolutely. Like, I don't... Maybe Biden did do it out of senility. Maybe they were just acting on truth.
Fuck!
Oh, no. See, like, we were always worried about Trump with the fucking nukes. It turns out, whoops, it was Biden.
Oh, yeah, no, but yeah, it's always the fucking Democrats who do the really stupid shit.
Oh, my God. Are we going to talk about the Mamdani win?
Yes, but briefly, I do have... Mm-hmm. Now, Chris, mm-hmm. not to put you on the hot chair,
mm-hmm.
But there have been rumblings, accusations, that you may have been using AI to create descriptions on videos.
I may have. I was wondering if that was going to come out, because I didn't hide it very well.
There have been a few people... I didn't notice, but a few people have mentioned it and linked
it. I'm surprised right? People yeah. Read the descriptions.
Naming no names, you can probably guess one of them. Yeah, people have...
Wing. People have, Ghosty? Hamish.
That's some of the names, yes. But no, people are... one unnamed source says it goes against the principles of the videos. Like, the videos are all sort of...
Anti-AI, and then
anti-AI, but also, like, very amateur, very... Yeah.
Yes, so, you're right. When I should just not use descriptions at all, or...
My stance would be no description is better than an AI description.
Yeah.
I did have it say that it was linked to them, and I was like, they're not good descriptions, even.
They're not. I mean, I would have said that if I'd have read them. All right, I hold my hands up to the hypocrisy. You got me. I was a bit like
these kind of sound like AI, but was Chris just stoned?
Ah, right. Well, no. Well, not because I'm not on the weed no more because of my new job.
Is that not allowed?
Well, yeah. Well, they do spot drug tests.
Are you not even allowed to have the not THC? What's the other one?
Oh, CBD.
You're not even allowed to have, because that doesn't fuck with your... I mean, it would if you were like
driving.
You know, it while driving, but. Like, do they include alcohol? Because like that seems a bit...
Yeah, no, it does seem a bit like, because I don't. Yeah. I wouldn't drink if I had, like, I don't like drinking. So, but.
I mean, I see the logic of making sure your drivers aren't on drugs while they're driving, for sure. But like, it shouldn't be a. I don't know. It should be like, you know, with a breathalyzer, there's a tolerance, right?
Yeah.
It shouldn't just be if this is in your system, you're not allowed to.
I don't know how good they are with weed on that regard.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't. Does it stay in your system long enough? Do we know how, to what degree, and when, and how far along the process it impairs your driving?
I mean, I guess just zero tolerance, but that would have to include alcohol for that to be genuinely zero tolerance.
Yeah, I mean, it could be an insurance thing, which I'm guessing probably comes into play with it. I don't know. Like, I suppose the zero tolerance policy is the really the only like line you can take that satisfies everyone, really.
Yeah, I get with public safety, but again, it would have to include alcohol, because I mean, it's going to be alcohol more than it's going to be anything else. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I often think that it's kind of strange that we give alcohol this weird pass. Like, we always talk about how bad it is, how hard done by pubs are, when it's like, pubs are the reason why so many people are scared to go out of their homes on Friday and Saturday evenings. You know, pubs are the reason why when my mate Rodders gets out the front door of his flat in Cardiff, the entire streets smell of puke. Like, the amount that the alcohol costs the taxpayer, not to put it in two, you know.
Because they really crack down on smoking. They're quite happy to be very anti-smoking and you know, which does less harm socially, certainly. It is odd that it gets such a power. I mean, it's just, it's been part of our culture since literally, you know, pre-civilization, right?
But yeah.
So is weed in certain places.
And mushrooms.
And coca leaves and, you know, all the cool plants that get you high.
It doesn't make any sense that weed is still legal. And it's one of those things where most of the people I talk to generally, that I talk to about this kind of stuff, are like, agree with me. And I'm probably like misthinking or like misassuming that like there's probably a near majority of people out there that probably have this concept of weed as being a lot more dangerous than it is.
And I don't think so anymore. Maybe like, I think you'd have to go like pre-90s for that to be the case, or maybe in the 90s. I think that's when it turned. Because I think most people would acknowledge that, again, at least in terms of like, you know, social harm, like weed, you'd rather have a village full of stoned people than a village full of drunk people, right?
Absolutely, yeah. You don't get stoners kicking over bins on a Friday night in the town centre.
No.
And also, stoners get the munchies, revives the takeaway scene, yeah.
And the convenience stores and takeaways. Why am I using American? The spa shops and the takeaways would fucking love it.
Yeah. Is a convenience store an Americanism?
I think so. I mean, store. We don't call them stores, we call them shops.
We call them stores in the army.
that's like a cupboard though, isn't it? Rather than a shop.
Well, it's where you store things, right? What about the commissary?
Well, Americans don't even call cupboards cupboards. They call cupboards closets.
Well, what about cupboards with food in?
They call them closets.
Do they?
I think pantry. I think if there's a cupboard with food in it, I think they call it a pantry. Even if it, to me, a pantry's a room, not just a cupboard. But Americans will call a cupboard with food in it a pantry. It's talking to Americans as much as I do, you realize how wrong they are about it. They call everything the wrong things. Like Danny was describing a situation at work to me, and they use different words for fucking everything. So I didn't understand a word of what she was fucking saying. And this is just waiting. She's a waitress.
Oh right, yeah. So what, like, what were some examples?
I can't even remember. There's one in particular that she keeps saying. I can never remember what it means. Tipping out. I mean, they do the whole tip thing though. But like, I had to tip out the bar staff because blah blah. What the fuck is that?
Well, give the tips out. Is that right?
In a very particular situation where, so very briefly. So if she's serving a table and that table also gets a drink from the bar, so the bartender has done some work, then she has to tip out of her tips to the bar so that their tips are covered from this blah blah blah. It's also insanely complex. But another one was bank. She was saying, oh, I need a bank, and that's what we would call a float.
Ah, right, okay.
But it's done, she has to provide the bank herself. Like, she has to take her own cash to work as a float, which she calls a bank, in order to give people change, and then that gets totted up in some way with work, and it's also
that's
ridiculously
awful.
Unnecessarily
that's weird.
Yeah, it's always my reaction. It's like,
one thing I've noticed about the tipping thing over here, right, is I went the other day. We have like these this chain. I don't think they were around when you last went outside. Called Lounges. So it's like a Pontio lounge or an Estero lounge, or they're just usual like that. Anyway, it's like a step up from Wetherspoons,
right?
More restauranty than Wetherspoons, and they're nice. It's good food, decent prices. Like generally nice places to eat. But and you order on your phone. You can order at the bar, but you can also order on your phone. You are asked for a tip at the point of sale.
That's weird. Is it an American chain?
I don't know if it's an American chain. It doesn't seem like an American chain, but I could be wrong. Yeah, and it's
we don't, like, yeah, somebody was saying to, like, trying to explain this to Danny, that I think it was Shaw trying to explain it. Like you here and in basically the rest of the world, you tip for extraordinary service, right?
Yeah.
If somebody else you're out of their way or is, you know, particularly kind or takes care of a problem, then you would give them a tip. Otherwise, they get paid for their work, and you know, same as everybody else does.
Yeah, put the expected tip onto the price.
Yeah, yeah, I think our reaction as, you know, quasi Europeans is pay them properly for a job. Mm. But like, interestingly, Danny wouldn't want that, because if you're a waitress in a fairly affluent area, you can. So I worked it out. Her average shift, how much she makes, and this is, I'm very much doxing Danny here, but I know she wouldn't mind. If she were doing her job full time, pro rata, that would be 70 grand a year.
That's not bad.
That's how much she makes. That's how much she makes in a shift.
Is that American grand?
Yes, that's 70,000 American dollars. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Which is high for America for what is a below minimum wage job, essentially.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, very different if she was in urban Detroit versus, you know, an affluent middle class hippie-ish town,
yeah,
where people have plenty of money and will tip. But yeah, you can make a lot of money serving in America.
Well, at the right places.
At the right places, exactly. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. How does she find it? She'd been in that line of work for quite a while, hasn't she?
Yeah, yeah. She just goes around, goes into places and says, "Are you looking for anybody?" You know, until she finds something. Yeah, she's working at two places currently.
Oh, nice. Does she work many hours?
Sorry?
Does she work many hours?
Yeah, she works, I would say, virtually full-time, probably like three or four days a week. And it's nice. Eight, between 6 and 10-hour shifts.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
It's looking like with my timetables when I start that I might be working longer shifts on a 4-day week, which I think I will quite like. I think that works well for me.
How long the shift?
Oh, 10 hours-ish.
Are you allowed to drive for that long?
We have to take breaks in the middle. So when I say 10-hour shift, there'll be healthy breaks in there. So I'm not just driving 10 hours on the road.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that sounds good. I think I'd rather do longer shifts and fewer days for sure. Yeah,
I'm still working out like how it's going to affect me, because when I was working at the bakery, like that was a very physical job.
Yeah.
So the days off were very much recovery days, and
I mean, it's going to start out like that for sure, just because it's a new thing. But like, imagine, based on just, you know, what I got from you working in that place, it was, it was physically tiring because you're on your feet all day, but I think it was just kind of emotionally draining, you know, psychologically draining because of the constant, you know, need to communicate and keep track of things and, you know.
Yeah, and I think at least with the bus, I'm sitting down all day, not to call anyone out, but when I was in the break room, I did notice that almost everyone there was of a portly stature.
Yeah.
But to be fair, that might have had a lot to do with the fact that all of the vending machines in the break room were like chocolate bars and stuff.
Yeah.
You know? So when I'm working out at the local depot, I don't know if they've got a chocolate bar machine or whatever. But like, to be honest, being a vegan kind of saves me here, because it's like a lot of those chocolate bars will have milk in them. So
yeah.
I'll probably be like forcing myself.
So you generally, you're not. Yeah, it's harder to get fat as a vegan, I imagine.
There are
it's kind of vegan who just eats bread and sugar.
Yeah, well, kind of like, you know, and there are a lot of fats in nuts as well. If you eat a lot of nuts, you can.
Yeah.
I know they're better.
I was going to say though, I saw a post on Fedi, and they were making a negative point about this, but talking about how in East Asia you get these like. In a small community, you'll have a little restaurant that is just literally like a granny who cooks noodles, and there are five tables in the restaurant, kind of thing. And everybody just knows, you know, it's great. You like go there in the evening if you want a meal, you get good noodles. And like, there's nothing like that over here. And they were sort of casting that negatively, just like some granny making like Sunday roasts or whatever. But I would fucking love that. And then somebody posted it's like that in the Balkans as well. You just get like in every town, every village has a little place that's like five tables run by a granny, and just serving, you know, really good food.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I was thinking when you said like it's all fucking chains here now, right? Even when I was out and about, it was when it was becoming all chains.
There's still some holdouts. When I lived in Norwich, there was they have a pretty prominent market in Norwich, and they got like these like units that you rent out a little market unit, and they're pretty like sturdy and you might rent them out for like longer periods of time, like mini shops almost. And there were quite a few small canteeny kind of
that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah, and they were quite good. Where you could just
do trucker cafes still exist?
Yeah, yeah. I haven't been to one for forever. Yeah,
best bacon sandwiches in my life at trucker cafes. Amazing.
Yeah, there are some holdouts, but I think the trouble is, especially with people traveling so much, is that with the chains, you kind of know what to expect when you go in there. Whereas, you know, small cafes is a bit more like, if I'm in the mood to spin the dice, like me and Rosie had lunch out yesterday, and we just had a place called Victoria's in Ross-on-Wye, just because we were going out there to, the Sainsbury's, because allegedly the Sainsbury's there, Sainsbury's are doing quite a lot of good Christmas vegan food. Not the one in Ross-on-Wye, sad to say. But we did have lunch out there, and we just went to like the nearest place called Victoria's. They had like the menu on the front, so you could see, because that's always good, because you could just see what sort of vegan, you know, how much they're going to cater to vegans.
Yeah.
They had the, you know, some pretty good options there, actually. And we went in, and
Rosie vegan as well.
Basically, yeah. Like, yeah. She'll let herself slip on a few, like, you know, if she's like in a restaurant hard up, vegan options are shit. She might like allow herself a bit of cheese or something. Yeah. But fundamentally, she is. Mm-hmm. So we go in and we just have an absolute fucking banger vegan breakfast. And
that's cool.
Yeah, and I got to remember to go onto like Google reviews or whatever. And I know we're the anti big tech podcast, but I do kind of want to help that business out by just going on and doing a 5-star review and just say they had the most immaculate bathroom I've ever seen. It was big. Yeah. It had like proper baby changing facilities. It had like pads and tampons for emergencies. It nice big mirror, like all the like just a really good bathroom as well. Sorry, that's an Americanism, isn't it? Water closet.
Yeah, we all get more America. But yeah, I know what you mean about the chains. Like, I always thought about that with like Travel Lodge is always my go-to example of like, it's never going to be amazing, but it's, you know, the band of quality within which it's going to be. If you're just tired as shit and you just need a place to sleep, and you go to a Travel Lodge, you know what you're going to get. It's very standard.
Yeah, and also, like, Travel Lodges can actually be really weirdly cheap. There's a Travel Lodge nearby. On a Sunday night, it's about 25 quid for a room for the night. It's like...
I always like staying in Travel Lodges. This doesn't apply to food for me, but for a place to sleep in, the more kind of, like, banal it is, the more like I like that boring neutrality of just like standardized, like, just, it's like the equivalent of beige, you know what I mean? Just, it's chill.
It's, well, like you say, it's like the factoryification of every industry, and it's like the hotel industry, it's like a factory hotel. To be fair, I went to London once and I stayed at the Elephant and Castle Travel Lodge, which is actually a really nice travel lodge. Like, it's up there with a Premier Inn. And it was Saturday night, and me and Dylan, who I was with, we were like, well, what are we going to do for food? Like, neither of us were particularly like interested in going into the heart of London on a Saturday to try and find something to eat where everyone's going to be booked and busy and So we thought, all right, we'll take a punt on the Travelodge cafe Saturday night. Elephant Castle, still a relatively central London place. There was like us and a couple of families, and then the rest of the restaurant was just empty. And it was like a really nice to have a quiet Saturday night meal in London. And the food was fine. Like, it was nothing. It was Wetherspoons-esque. Good enough. I can actually recommend it as one of the better travel lodges I've been to. The Elephant and Castle, you know. They do vary a bit in quality. Sometimes they give you a key, sometimes they give you a key card. Like Premier Inn, that is quality across the board all the time. They're a lot more like standardized and stuff. What else have I stayed in a lot? I don't know. Like Ibis, if you get one, are kind of a bit more cheaper and nastier, but they're standard. They're very, like, I think they're sort of like...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The nightmare for me, do you ever watch that? Oh, I think it was like a Channel 4 show back in the day where people who ran B&Bs would go and stay at each other's B&Bs or like hotels or whatever and rate them. Can't remember what it's called. But a lot of them were like very like, the people running it were quirky. And so the hotels were like quirky and would have like, you know, just like like a fucking Victorian drawing room, just full of shit. Like, you know, it's quirky. Oh, it's, you know, it's quirky. Everything's got fucking mural. Like, I don't want busy. Like, I would fucking hate that.
Yeah, because you never know what, busy. Like, it comes across as a bit, like, unclean. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
Are the cleaners really going to clean every...
Yeah, like dust traps, yeah. But also, just like, vision. I think, maybe it's an anxiety thing, but I want... Like, my ideal is just beige fucking walls. Just beige walls and a bed. Just calm. Just calmness. I want calmness in the room that I'm, you know, occupying.
Do you find beige to be more calming than brilliant white?
Yeah, yeah. White's a bit too... Yeah, a bit too...
This house is a new build, and all of the walls are, like, brilliant white here.
Is it white-white, or is it, like, an eggshell, or a...
No, it's white-white, just straight-up white.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't mind white. White's okay.
This is nice. Like, I used to be a colour kind of person, and, like... I think I go through phases of, like, loving colour too much and then loving neutrals too much. I seem to, like...
I think I like the idea of colours. I like, you know, it's more fun. You know, it can be exciting. Colour is, you know, more vibrant, obviously inherently more vibrant and kind of expressive, but really I just want a blank room. I don't even like art on the walls.
Oh.
I get bored of it too quickly. Like, I just want a blank fucking wall. Ideally, a big window with a lovely view. That would be ideal, but, you know, just, yeah, serene.
Yeah. We've got a little window out there. Otis loves just, like, so we made, like, a little blanket nest up by the window, and Otis just goes up there and sits in his blanket and just watches the world go by.
He's
got access to, like, every face of the house, I think. So there's always something to watch. He loves watching the birds, obviously. We try and
weird when cats are, when they're just watching birds, because obviously they want their instinct, like, they want to fucking kill them, right?
Yeah.
But when they're just watching them, is that their equivalent of, like, porn for us? Like, do they get off on just watching and imagining what they would do if they were out there? You know, because they must be wanting to fucking kill that shit.
This is one of those things about animals. I never quite know. Is that, like, do they want to kill, or is it something much more innate?
Oh, yeah, no, I think it's just, yeah, I think it's just their brain rewards them for killing so that they are good at killing, right? But I don't think it's a want in the sense that we would want to whatever.
Yeah.
Probably the same as being horny, right?
Yeah, or needing the toilet or something. Yeah, like it's a...
Yeah, it's just your brain rewards you for... Yeah.
It's programming, basically, in that regard.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But...
Yeah. Is that why animals fundamentally, for the most part, can't be considered moral beings?
I mean that gets into stuff that's not really settled.
Depends on the animal, obviously.
Yeah. It's one of those things. I mean, we don't even know how our brains work.
And also, you know, to be fair, our biggest contention, but, like, morals is a very human concept. Like...
Yeah, no, I don't know. It is, of course, but then everything is. I don't think that means we can't apply an analogue of it to other species. But, I mean, like I say, the experiment that proved that, you know, these monkeys were exhibiting...
When I say a human concept, I mean, it might extend beyond humans as well. Like, it might be an intelligence thing. I don't know, maybe... I think there are some cases of dolphins showing, like, genuine altruism as well.
Mm. Yeah, and that I think it's kind of like a famous clip now, but that we know that monkeys can lie.
Yes, yeah.
That brilliant bit on that wildlife documentary where, because these particular, I can't remember what kind of monkeys, but some kind of monkeys, and they have, like, a shout that means there's an eagle coming, and when there's an eagle coming, you leg it and get up the trees. Mm. So in this documentary, it shows one monkey coming along with, like, armfuls of fruit, like, ready to eat, and, like, another monkey spots him and goes, like, there's an eagle, like, does that, and this monkey drops all the fruit, legs it up a tree, and the other monkey just walks over, picks up all the fruit and starts eating it. So, like,
yeah, it's like Otis, he'll ask me for food, I'll feed him, and then I'll go and ask Rosie for food, knowing full well. like
he's starving.
Yeah,
like it's the most desperate thing in the world. Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah, which I think is, yeah, I think they're being dishonest. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't... But, like, obviously Otis doesn't understand that there's a limited amount of food. Like, to him, it's just like, you do know, if you open up this cupboard, like, you could just eat and eat and eat. Like, and it fills up just magically. I mean,
no, I think it gets down to there's a Wittgenstein quote where he said, if a lion could speak, we would not understand him.
How
meaning that you're like basically what you said, like our language is born of our experience.
Yeah.
So even if a lion spoke English, we wouldn't like I was not understanding Danny's works. Like,
entirely different worlds. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like if aliens could speak English.
Yeah.
They'd be like,
and a certain level of intelligence. We you know, given enough time and somebody with the right talents, you can translate, you know, which is why we can translate between languages and stuff, obviously. But yeah, on a fundamental level, yeah, in an immediate way, yeah, you've got to have a shared experience to have a shared language.
Like that episode of Star Trek. Is it Gunnar and Gamok or something?
Have you seen it?
I've seen that episode.
Yeah, that's great. I love that episode.
It's a good episode. Yeah, yeah. It was. I watched a few episodes that were given to me as I like. If you want to understand the essence of Star Trek,
this a recent thing or this what?
No, this was years. This was years ago.
Okay. That's cool.
So I've forgotten a lot of it. But see,
common. Go on, sorry.
I kind of like what I've seen of the Next Generation. So it's there's a part of me that kind of wants to. It comes from a very. Yeah, I think I probably would enjoy it.
It's, you know, it's often moral dilemmas and interesting moral situations. The only problem with TNG is the first two seasons are rough.
Everyone says that.
There's still some good episodes in the first couple of seasons, but yeah, I think you'd enjoy it. Yeah, I think you very much enjoy it. Has Rosie seen it? I could see Rosie enjoying it as well.
I think she has, but I'm not entirely certain. I just, for some reason, always found it like, it's one of those things, a bit like Lord of the Rings. I never could quite just catch on to it, a little, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I finally watched the three movies, and I generally enjoyed them. Not
really.
Yeah. They were good. I liked them.
I would have preferred if something had happened at some point.
Nah, it's not about things happening. It's about friendship and camaraderie.
It's bad. If it's about friendship, it's bad. It does friendship badly. Apart from, you know, Sam. Obviously, Sam is the only good thing about it.
Sam is the, you know, he is the friendship guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I view it as like Tolkien's reflection on the war.
Yeah, and apparently not. I think that's a common reading, but Tolkien very much.
Tolkien dismisses it. Absolutely. Yeah. He outright says, no. I don't believe him.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely in there for sure, but I think for Tolkien, like his idea was with it was that. Because of our peculiar history, the English don't have a history. Like, we don't have a mythology. We don't have a native English mythology. Because, first of all, what is English? Do we mean the Celts or do we mean the Anglo-Saxons? And, you know, but their traditions were lost and completely overwritten by Christianity, basically. So his idea was to create a mythology for the English and of Englishness. And I think people just saying, oh, it's just a war allegory, is like, no, you're missing the fucking point. You know, like, it irritated him. But at the same time, it's clearly also a war.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Allegory to a point, but also it's just like, it's a piece of him that existed then.
Yeah.
That is, you know, maybe he didn't even know it or...
Yeah, I think that's probably, yeah. If he's writing about, you know, huge... continental conflicts and wars, he's inevitably going to draw on his experience, right?
Yeah,
it's inevitably going to come from that. Yeah,
and the thing about it, when it depicts war stuff, and to me, I always read as a lot of the war stuff to be like, for example, the orcs and stuff, like I almost consider that to be a bit of an opt-out, because it's like one of the things that it doesn't recognize your enemies as human fundamentally, which you could say it's a criticism, or you could say it's just like, that's just not a part of the story Tolkien is interested in. He's just like, these are orcs, they're made in a lab or whatever, and...
I think it's a bit more that... I think that's where his Catholicism comes through, in that it's very much the Catholic conception of evil, where evil is not like an active force, evil is the absence of good.
Yeah. It's a concept. So, yeah, it's a conceptual villain.
The way the orcs are created, they are... Yeah, they're just lacking good. They're not... actively evil, they're just lacking goodness.
Yeah, like a blank allegorical slate, as it were. Like,
yeah,
they're just bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Like, and That's because that's just not part. That just not part of the story he wants to tell. Well, that's just not the story. Whereas, like, the war is depicted, or war in general is depicted as people coming together for a common cause, friendships being made, you know, demons being faced, all that kind of thing. And it's like you're doing it side by side with people that you might not otherwise be side by side with.
I think this is where it very much, very much reflects World War One. Is he clearly has a distinction between, like, noble battle, like heroic noble battle, where, you know, it's one, you know, man, usually one man's prowess against another man's prowess, and the better man wins, versus the industrialized war that the evil people are doing in Lord of the Rings, you know, literally ripping up trees and throwing them into furnaces. And that's, I mean, that is, it's about the industrialization of war, which is a very small C conservative conception of, you know, it's war isn't the problem. It's the mechanization of war that's the problem.
Well, I mean, I guess World War One and in the period running up to that, that was like the mass production, really sort of kicked into gear when it came to things like weapons
machine guns and tanks.
Machine guns, So war became something a whole lot different then, I guess.
I mean, it definitely did. It was a big ramping up, but there was a similar thing when crossbows were invented.
Yeah.
Like, the Catholic Church outlawed crossbows because a crossbow allows a commoner to kill a noble.
I mean, I suppose that's the industrialization of war is just a long slope then.
I mean, it's definitely ramped up. World War One, that, like, there hadn't been a major conflict in Europe, like a big multinational conflict in Europe, since the Napoleonic Wars. So between the Napoleonic Wars and World War One, it's a relatively peaceful period. It's not bad going on, because Europe was just perpetually at war.
What's that? 150-year difference or something?
Yeah, something like
We could see something like, you know, it's coming around again, isn't it? Really, you know, for us.
Yeah. I think there is a thing when there's a couple of generations that don't really know how horrible war is because they didn't experience it or they didn't see people experiencing it. Yeah, they forget how bad it is and they're less afraid of it.
Yeah. I think that's definitely something we need to, like, learn as a society.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. We don't want this. We want anything but this, you know?
Anything but this, yeah. No war but class war thing. You know, the soldier isn't your enemy. The leader that's making you go to war is the enemy.
I wish we were a little bit more conscious of that. Like, I feel like everyone kind of knows it, but doesn't internalize it.
I think we're very good at, like, you know, the symbology, the trappings of nation, all, before nations, it was kings and, you know, for king and country. And now it's about nations and protecting the homeland. And, like, they're very good at propagandizing us about that stuff.
Abstract
symbolic.
Yeah, this is why I think the older I get, the more anti-nationalistic I get. That includes Plaid Cymru, which are the politically correct, lovely, soft, you know, type of nationalism. I still think it kind of ends up leading to the same place, even though they try not to, and they try
Even in terms of devolution and that, in terms of economic justice, devolution would be the right thing. You know, Wales being self-determining and having control, you know, not being intentionally held back by... London and that, but then, you know, the counter to that is, you know, a working class person in Wales has more in common with a working class person across the border than they do with, you know, the ruling class in either place. And that's, I wish we could focus on the same, you know, same argument for Scottish independence. I entirely understand why a Scot would want Scottish independence. I get it. I get that it's justice, but at the same time, I wish we could just be, you know, working class solidaristic.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's a purely clerical equation, right? Like, I think this is, like, you can't get excited and angry about a clerical equation, right? But it's just like, I think Wales as a country is a good size and scope and all that kind of thing to manage itself. I mean, maybe England could go into some you know, could have more regional.
Well, the other part of this is, you know, the other parts of England are fucked over as much by London as, yeah, you know, as much is probably going too far, but, you know, are to some degree greatly, you know, I think it's,
well, certainly the North,
England
has, yeah,
the same, like on the sort of, I can't remember what it's called, like the, some kind of economic index of, you know, how comfortable life is. I can't remember the, you know what I mean? Human Development Index, that's the fucker.
That's it.
The north of England is on a par with the poorest countries in Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, worse than even the poorest countries in Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, it's, London is the problem. England isn't really the problem. London is the problem.
I mean, and again, this is where I fall out with a lot of Welsh nationalists, is that culturally, and you can put some historical context to this if you want, but like, we are where we are. And culturally, Wales and England, Wales and non-London England, Wales and the bit across the border, Herefordshire, Gloucestershire, we're very similar. Very similar culturally. This isn't this.
Well, it's not like the border magically makes things, you know, different.
Exactly.
Like what you step on, you know,
And it's literally, to me, just a clerical. It's just a functional. You know, I think. I mean, yeah, it does emanate from the over-centralization of our economics, that London being, I mean, what is it? It's one of the most centralized economies in the world, really, if not the most centralized economy in the world. And it's like, it's
certainly
just
more,
and it just causes so much ball ache, really, like, you know, decentralize, you know, slogan of the Fediverse, which interestingly enough, actually, I am surprised how vehemently the YouTube AI is trying to get me to make videos about PeerTube.
Really?
So on the YouTube Studio, there's a tab that says that uses the Google AI to generate video ideas. Yeah. And then you can somewhat like expand off of this. And I got to be honest, shamefully, right? Call me all the hypocrite you want, because it's probably true. Actually quite good. It looks at your videos. It looks at the videos that have done well. And it's like, okay, based on... Well,
that's the kind of limited scope problem that AI is quite good at. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And it keeps coming around. It comes up with the usual stuff like Debian unstable. Can it be used as a daily driver? And stuff like that. So it is quite good with a lot of ideas. And one of the... But it keeps bringing up PeerTube and decentralized video, the breakaway from big tech and all that kind of stuff. Because obviously...
That's interesting. Yeah. I mean, that is just... I assume at some point they would tweak that. You know what I mean? They would stop it from suggesting its own demise. But like, it's interesting.
This is one of the big arguments against AI, right? Like at the moment now, because it's fundamentally like beta level technology, it's running its own course a little bit more than what it that we know they're going to clamp down on it. We've already heard Elon Musk talk about how. Well, what's the thing that Elon Musk done with Wikipedia? Grokopedia or something? Where it's like AI-ification of Wikipedia, but fundamentally to push his view of the world.
So he's got control of it.
So I'm almost certain at this stage, if we don't already outright know, Grok, the Twitter X AI, that's basically a right-wing AI. Like, that's just...
And they're
going to do the same. Like, I think when I was shamefully doing an AI... description for one of the videos, it was dancing around the political issues so much that it was quite infuriating. I can't talk about politics. So it takes this awful sort of opt-out, fluffy middle ground, which is another reason why I should not be using AI to do video description.
I understand why you would. I would come down on no description.
All right. I will consider myself sufficiently and appropriately chided by the community, and I will cease immediate action. There we go. I'll put like a sentence of like you know, I'll put a sentence
this is,
in.
You could do an apology video. People love an apology video. Like a three hour long write the script with AI. Do an AI Chris Ware voice reading it out. Apology for using AI.
Okay, I do actually have a large language model thing on that's locally, that you can run locally.
Yeah.
But the trouble is, it fires up the hardware to a point where I don't like it. And yeah. It's still, and it takes a lot longer. So
yeah, it's very slow, isn't it? Yeah,
it is possible to do local large language model stuff, but you know,
no, it's still disgusting.
Naughty Chris, yeah,
you gotta go cold turkey.
Gotta go cold turkey. Nip it in the bud. So I am quite surprised that the Google Gemini stuff. God, I hate the fact they called it Gemini. That just
I'm guessing
it's just a coincidence. You know, that
I would imagine it's a coincidence, but it's an irritating one. I mean, yeah. But it's fine. Different things have the same name. It's fine.
It's not so much. It's the same. It's the, like when you want to look up stuff for the Gemini protocol.
Yeah. I mean, you can. I mean, you always had to Google Gemini protocol anyway, because Gemini refers to so many other things that it.
Yeah, but it's still. Unfortunately enough, it's a small enough ecosystem that you can sort of just go straight to the documentation, and it's pretty comprehensive. And
yeah, how long? Imagine that another search engine takes over from Google, right? In terms of the market, how long do you think it would take us to stop using Google as a verb, or is that just like Hoover now? Is that, do you Hoover regardless of, you know, is it that, or would it change? Because these things can change very quickly, I think.
These things do change pretty quickly, don't they?
I think this is just a happy accident on Google's part, but I think that word verbifies quite well.
Yeah.
Like, we would never say, I'm going to Bing that. That just wouldn't happen, because that sounds horrible. But I'm going to Google that. It flows. It's an ugly word, but it verbs.
But it's the B in Bing. B is too... The B sound...
Hard work.
It's hard work.
Goddamn work thing.
Yeah, Google. You can say Google with moving very little of your mouth. Bing,
yeah.
I think that's good. That's why sometimes people go, oh, why do you say like www when w3 is fewer syllables? It's like, well, www is just, that's just kind of easy to say, because it's, once you've said the w, www, you can say as many as you want. Yeah.
No, because I'm leaning away from Google. Like, I've obviously don't like Google as a company, but I stuck with their search while it was all I really cared about with search was the quality of the results.
Yeah,
like I'm a sellout with search. If the results are better, I'll use that. But Google aren't good now, so I've been using Start Page.
Okay,
I'm still trying to force. There's a lot of habit of going to Google, but I'm trying to force myself to use Start. But I still say Googled. Like, I'll Google that. The same as Photoshopped. Like, I'm more likely to say Photoshopped than GIMPed.
I've never used Photoshop. And to be fair, you don't want to use the term GIMPed in polite company.
Well, it's that, and also anybody outside of our world doesn't know what the fuck you're talking about, right?
Exactly, Whereas
everybody knows Photoshop.
Also, again, not endorsing any language here, saying I'm going to GIMP something sounds like you're going to, like, cut its legs off.
Also, I mean, Photoshop, this is why they named it Photoshop. It referred to photoshopping things in a Photoshop. You know, that's why they called it Photoshop. So it was an existing verb anyway.
Yeah. And it doesn't sound super branded, really.
No, it doesn't, no.
So it's not like Adobe shopping or something like that.
Google is just a made up word. I think it could stick around, or it could switch overnight, I think.
Well, I was told that it was a misspelling of Google.
I think it was an intentional misspelling, right? I don't know whether that's them. My suspicion is they just came up with a funny word and then found out about Google and said, oh, yeah, no, we're really smart and we just wanted something that sounded like Google.
Interestingly enough, someone, I think it was Steve Jobs, was confronted about the Apple logo with the bite being taken out of it, and whether or not that is a reference to Alan Turing, who killed himself by putting the cyanide, was it, on the apple and then eating it?
Yeah.
And Steve Jobs, I think it was Steve Jobs. It wasn't like, what, Larry Page? Is that the other guy? No, Steve Wozniak, whatever?
It was Wozniak, yeah.
Yeah. I think it was Steve Jobs. He said, actually, no, it's just like, we just liked that. We just, I don't know, it wasn't.
The very first Apple logo was, do you know what I'm talking about when I say that?
I have a vague memory of it.
Because a description won't do it justice.
Oh, the multicolored one.
No. This, for listeners, it's like almost like a Victorian engraving of Isaac Newton sitting under a tree with the apple above his head. And yeah, in sort of a banner around that, it says Apple Computer Co. That was their very first logo. So the apple in Apple, if it referred to anything, was, yeah, the Newton apple. But I think the bite out of it, I think it's kind of sexy because it refers to, like, the, you know, the fall, you know, the Eve taking the bite out of the apple and gaining knowledge. It's got to refer to that. I don't think these things often necessarily refer to one specific thing, but they're drawing ideas in. And I think they like to say that the Turing thing is in there just because that's a cool nerdy thing. But I think it's more, yeah, it's Newton, it's the fall, it's the idea of gaining, you know, not the power over knowledge and knowledge of oneself and all those kind of things, I think.
Yeah. Anyway.
No, an apple with a bite out of it is just inherently a little bit sexier than just an apple. Right?
Well, an apple just, it's just, yeah. Mm.
Yeah. It's consumption. It's.
Yeah. It's like when you depict a book, you don't depict just the square of the book.
Book. Yeah.
No, it's always leaf open.
Yeah.
But there was one thing we got sidetracked on that I do want to talk about, which is, it was the KeePass XC thing. Mm. And since we are now in the habit of, instead of looking for a program to do something, can we do it ourselves through a bash script or something, or a Rofi menu or whatever? And I'm kind of thinking, now this is encryption, so this is a bit more difficult, but is there a way to go about doing this? So if you have your password in an encrypted something or other.
Well, pass is a bash script.
Okay. And does it just uses
GPG. All pass does is make GPG files in a structured folder structure, you think. It just makes GPG files. Yeah, they're just text files that are GPG'd.
Okay, so we do that.
In a directory structure.
And because I was thinking of having it as a CSV that was zipped in an encrypted 7-zip, which I think is pretty secure, right?
I don't know, but I imagine so.
Okay, I'm happy. I'm very happy to listen on to feedback for this because this is not my area of expertise. But we take a 7-zip file, encrypted it. Inside that file is a CSV, and I say CSV or tabs separated values because it's easy to work with, right? Like, I've already done things with it. So that's got all the password data in, and then is there a way to, like, extract it into a temporary folder, view it, and then pull out the necessary bits.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
then
sure.
And then delete it in such a way that's.
Is there a mechanism for writing to it without fully extracting it? Can you, like, partially extract? I know I think some zip formats you can actually edit without decompressing the whole thing, right? Or read or edit.
Possibly.
I might be wrong about that.
Yeah, that might be something that.
I mean, if not, then it's, you know, it's text. It's going to extract quite quickly. Yeah, you could just extract the thing, write to it, and
the thing is, if we extract into a temporary folder and then delete it, is that still a security problem?
Yeah, again, it's not our area of expertise. I'm not a security person.
Is it something that maybe extract into RAM and then do it?
Your temp folder's in RAM anyway.
Oh, your temp folder's in RAM anyway?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What, /temp?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, so anything in temp is gone when you reboot.
Oh, okay. Right. Okay, that might be okay then. If it just gets temporarily extracted.
You could stick it in there, delete it when you're done as well. Delete the stuff in temp when you're done, and it will be deleted when you reboot anyway. I think that's, for you and I think that's perfectly secure enough. I imagine for somebody who, you know, who's working for the CIA or whatever, they'd need a bit more, but, you know.
Yeah. Okay. And then, yeah, okay. You pull that out maybe in a Rofi menu or something, and then, like what I've got for my address book is just, my address book is in a CSV file. I bring it up, I select the email address, and then it just copies to clipboard, and then I could just throw it wherever I need it.
Yeah, I think that sounds perfectly doable. Yeah,
you put it straight into Mutt, but I actually think, I don't know, I find greater utility in just having it on the clipboard and then throwing it in.
Yeah, mine can do both, but I mean, I rarely use it.
Yeah,
like, I super rarely use it, but yeah, just being able to type the beginning of an email address then tab in Mutt and it fills it in.
Yeah.
Why not? Since it can.
Oh, did we get a boot in the group?
There's a Left 4 Dead going on.
Oh, Left 4 Dead going on. My car is coming out the shop, so.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I got to be on the lookout for that. Do you want to go to that? Because I think we can wrap it up here.
Yeah, if we're good, yeah.
Awesome. All right. Thank you everyone for joining us. Ah, oh, Tamir looks fucking good in the chat. He just posted his picture.
Looking yeah, Tamir's beautiful.
Yeah,
he's a beautiful man.
Beautiful man.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Shout out to Running Water. We absolutely appreciate everything you do.
Yep.
And
Running Water.
Happy 3 years.
Is it 3 years? I was going to ask how long.
Yeah, three years. Yeah. So yeah, and you can go back. I actually found the very first one and pop that up. Email is dead and smartphones are essential. And here we are talking about email. cool. All right, anyway, thank you very much for joining us and see you soon.
Bye bye.